Father God, we ask you to transform this room for the next hour that we're here. Help us to stay focused on your message. Thank you for the gift of recovery. Thank you for loving us enough to give us this specific place on this specific night, in this specific weather, to get us here, to get us in this building, to let us hear your message, that you knew what we needed way before we knew what we needed. We thank you, and we pray all this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am a very proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
Thank you very much. And I want to say this is a great podium. This is really fantastic. Thank you. Touch the mic. The mic, and I'm not even going to see it. Can you... You know, to say that I'm a little overwhelmed tonight would be an understatement. That we would come out on a night like this, in weather like this, like my friend Patrick said, there's no place in the world that I would rather be. I used to get high in way worse weather than this. I do need to touch this for a second. The microphone's all on. Touching the microphone. Just in case, you know, later on, you think it's a different type of meeting. Tonight we're going to be doing a combination of two steps. The first step, the second half of the first step, and the second step. And all during the weeks, we're going to be touching upon both steps. The steps, as Paulie pointed out to me, is there's one step that's get ready, and then the next step is go. There's one step that's get ready, and the next step is go. Tonight we're going to be talking about a little bit of going. Last week we're talking about getting ready. By the time we're done here in the next 12, 13, 14, 15 weeks, however it takes us to finish these steps. Hopefully by the end of that we'll have come to a closer relationship with a power greater than ourselves, what I choose to call God. That has came and transformed my life. Totally from the inside out. And I'm excited that you that were here last week wanted to come back to hear about that journey, because that's what we're going to be talking about. The entire process, going through the steps, how we came in, how I came in, what God did for me when I didn't even know there was a God, how he transformed me when I didn't even know I needed to be transformed, how in the sixth and seventh step, which I always thought was a footnote, turned out to change my life, and I always thought it was a nothing step. And then by the time step 11 came, and now to where it is today, completely and utterly, I'm not the same person. The flesh is the same, of course. It's the same flesh that I was born with. But the spirit has totally been transformed. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, as the result of these steps, is a true fact. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about hope. I don't know about you, but I can always use a little bit more hope. The principle behind the second step is hope. And I'm hopeful that in 2010, at least for the first couple weeks, that we are going to have things that we wouldn't even have dreamed about in 2009. That there's going to be an overabundance of blessing. And I believe in that. I need to start off by telling you that, well, first of all, let me just say that one of the guys that's here, and you know, some of us know him as Lenny. Other ones of us know him as Lenny, actually, in this group. It's very touching to me that he's here, because when I was in transitions 8 years ago, this month, and I walked up into that parking lot, to those steps, and came up those steps, Lenny happened to be outside, and he said, "Welcome back. Welcome back. It's so good to see you." And then, of course, it's very touching for me, because my two roommates, shortly after that, from the halfway house we lived in, are sitting right here at this table. My sister is here from New York with her wonderful husband, and my dad are sitting right there at the table. This is my sister's first AA meeting where I'm actually speaking the steps. You see, they had a first-hand experience of me not being able to take the first step, and of course, a lot of you guys know my wife. So if you think that tonight I'm going to be able to elaborate or exaggerate, when the people that actually saw what was going on are sitting right at that table, You think I'm going to be able to, you know, just start making stuff up on how it wasn't that bad, or maybe it was even worse than it was? The people that were sober and saw through sober eyes and had to live through what I did are sitting right there. You see, my fifth year of sobriety, my father drowned in an accident in Mexico. By the way, we're going to Mexico tomorrow, Dad, so stay out of the water. Thank God it's cold. I don't need any issues right now. So my fifth year of sobriety, my dad drowns. And he's pronounced dead. He dies five times in a night in Mexico. And I'm sitting there and I'm having dinner with my grandfather and my wife, and we get the phone call from the priest that says, in Mexico, that you're going to need to arrange for a funeral, that we're doing last rites over him in Mexico. And he wasn't going to make it through the night. And they airlift him through one of those special medical planes to a hospital in Miami. And he arrives, and he is, completely under. And my sister and my brother-in-law, they fly down, and my older sister, they fly down. And as all families do in tragedy, everyone takes a different position in a tragedy, in a grief. Some people grieve one way. Other people, they rise to the occasion. Other people fall to the occasion. Now, with a program in action, and a program in Alcoholics Anonymous, not that I'm looking forward to handling that situation today, not that I would ever want to handle that situation again today, but I could handle that situation today sober. But at 5 years of sobriety last time around, I only had the outside fixed up. I only had the outside fixed up. You see, if we come in here and we stay in here and we don't change in here, we will go back to the man we were before or the woman we were before. That's just a fact. It's not like you come in and you go to some meetings and you kind of get it and you kind of do the deal and you're going to get it. I want to read something to you. The doctor said you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Now, let me just say, for the next 12 weeks, however soon you ask me to leave, we've been known to do the steps for many months. When I say alcoholism, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. I have the textbooks of Alcoholics Anonymous here, and I follow the textbooks of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is written in 1939, and the 12 and 12, which is written 15 years later. But if you think that when I say alcoholism, that I'm not talking about addiction, you're wrong. I am addicted to anything and everything that makes me feel good. So I say alcoholism because I do suffer from alcoholism. But believe me, if you're going to start to split hairs, when this book that will save your life and is 100% the book that will save us, and you start splitting hairs on I'm an addict and I'm not an alcoholic, then you've already messed up with the first step. Because now you already know better. I don't want to know better than these books. Now, does it say that this is but a spiritual kindergarten and we will do other things to get it spiritually fed? Absolutely. But don't think because I go to another program, Narcotics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous, or that I go to Celebrate Recovery, that I don't believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I do believe in is that all of this will help you to develop a relationship with God. And then, of course, the book that I believe that the big book was written from. Come on. So, while I'm in the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're going to be talking about alcoholism. The doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never seen one single case recover. I've never seen one single case recover. Where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. Has anybody in here ever felt like the gates of hell closed on them with a clang? I felt like the gates of hell closed on me with a clang. I can remember a lot of those days when it was a clang. Then the next line is, like a lot of us, after we've been pushed to the brink, after we think we have all the answers and we find out we don't have the answers, after we've already picked up, after we can't stop using, then we say, but is there no exceptions? After you didn't want to go to a meeting because of sports team, because it was a Friday night and you wanted to go down to South Beach, after you can't stop using, then you say, is there no exceptions? Yeah, there are exceptions. You want to hear what those exceptions are? Exceptions such as yours have been occurring since the early times. Here and there, once in a while, people have recovered. Here and there, once in a while. So if you think that you can come in here, stay in here, play around in here, and you're going to be here and there once in a while, you're going to be in the small minority that are happy at 31 years, that are happy at 31 years. Did you bring your own chair tonight?
Not tonight.
The man brought his own chair last week for 31 years. Because regardless, he wanted to have a seat. Because there was nothing more important to him than being in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with some of his friends from his home group. And I'm sure... And I'm sure Fred had other places to go to on a Saturday night than at 25, 24 years. How many years you got, Fred?
27.
27 years?
27 years.
27 years. 27 years. 27 years. Because it's few. It's few. And it's far in between on those that stay and have contented sobriety. And that doctor knew that. So I want to tell you, if you're new and you're just coming in or you're coming back, even though you know I coined the phrase from our very good friend, you really are off the hook. There is no more hopeful place to be than I don't know. I don't know what to do. My life was destroyed. It may be that there's a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. How much more hopeful is that than I have all the answers and my life still sucks? I got all the answers. You know what? I got all the answers, but my life still sucks. I'm running the show. I'm taking care of my own meeting schedule. I'm listening to myself instead of a sponsor. I've decided that with some years of sobriety, I sound pretty good. And I'm going to start listening to this mind, the same mind that created the problem, to start running my life. So at 5 years of sobriety, when my dad... Now, my dad is not like a dad that I send a card to once a year. My dad to us and our family is everything. And so when my dad was pronounced dead, it wasn't like business as usual for me. It was like my whole world went down the toilet in 60 seconds. But in absence of a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, in absence of a changed man, and in absence of a life surrendered to God, I went straight to what I always did to, was a doctor. And I said to a doctor, I need to have something to help me cope through this tragedy. And they prescribed me whatever they do. To help you cope with a tragedy. You see, the only thing I need to have prescribed to me today, which is in this book, that there is a power that's greater than myself, that one is God, may you find him now. I have come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. And, not that I'm asking for it, but let me tell you that this world is not going to be like you come into AA and everything goes great. Am I right, Jenna? It's not a life beyond your wildest dreams. From the moment you get in, it's going to be good days, it's going to be bad days. It's going to be in and out. It's going to be bottom. You're going to be in valleys, you're going to be on top. You're going to be at pain, you're going to be in a hospital. You're going to need to take medication, you need to pray about that. You're going to have a lot of different things happen to you. But if the first response that you have in a tragedy that's going to happen in your life, you go to medication, you're not in the program that they're talking about here. And I went to, while my sister and brother-in-law were handling a business, I went to taking little pink pills. Now, did I abuse those pills? Absolutely not. Did I need to turn to those pills? Absolutely not. And I developed a pattern in my brain to say that the next tragedy that happens, pills, not him, will take care of it. And as my father started to recover in my house and started to live with me, and it was a great time for us, and he started to recover and started to speak again and started to see again and started to rehabilitate, and it was a miracle, I continued to take those pills. Now, they only had prescribed me pills for like a week. The little magic pills, you get them for 7 days and it gets you through the event. But as you know, in South Florida, there are some pills around in South Florida. And I started to self-prescribe myself. So when I say that I picked up my 7-year medallion in Alcoholics Anonymous, I did pick up my 7-year medallion, beer, in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was not pill-free. I was alcohol-free. And I started to do some things in my house that were totally beyond bizarre. The second step says, I came to believe that a power greater than ourselves will restore us to sanity. You want to hear about some insanity? Let me tell you about insanity. In my house, as my father's starting to recover in the house, I start taking pills at night to go to sleep. I never took pills during the day to go to work. I never took pills during the day. I didn't do all that kind of stuff. What I liked was to take pills and watch TV. I liked the feeling of watching TV on pills. And then I started to drink because I knew that I was in recovery from alcohol. I started to drink non-alcoholic beer in the house. Non-alcoholic beer. Because the principle behind the first step is honesty. You see, isn't it amazing? They put these principles out there behind the steps, and these are actually the things we don't have. The principle behind the first step is honesty. You're not honest when you come in. You're so far from honest, you can't even say the word. You can't even say, you're like, I lie. That's all you can say. You can't even say that word out of your mouth without the corner of your mouth starting to twinge. And yet the principle behind the first step is honesty. Because without honesty, without honestly admitting that you're licked, without honestly admitting that you're a loser, that's right, a loser, you lost the battle that comes with battling drugs and alcohol. That's right, you are a loser, and I was a loser. And until I could admit I was a loser, until I could admit defeat, I could never become what? A winner. Amen. Absolutely. It says that alcohol is like the rapacious creditor. It means it's a creditor that never stops attacking. It doesn't take a day off. It's always there. It's always waiting to get you. Lenny, how many years have we been doing this? 25 years? 25 years? You're part of people's stories for 25 years? It never stops. One night I was sitting with a guy named Paulie and another guy named Gary Hunt, God rest his soul. And I was sitting with Lenny. And I was 8 months sober, and I was sitting around these guys, and these guys were like, you know, it was like sitting around Bill and Bob and Charlie. I was sitting around these guys, I was listening to them talk, and they were sitting around the table, and Paulie was like, remember that time? And they were like, yeah, remember that time he came over my house? And then Gary, which I didn't know, that helped start the meeting I was in. Mainline is what you used to take me to. Gary was saying to you and to Paul, I don't got to listen to these people. I started this meeting. I started this meeting. And he did start that meeting. And when he went back, there was 300 people. But when he went back, he lasted 3 weeks before he died. Because this disease does not play, and this is no respecter of persons. So when people say to me, Stevie B, this is fantastic, you pack rooms, it's so amazing listening to you. Let me tell you, it's so amazing listening about him. I'm a mouthpiece for what he's done in my life. And I don't let any of it, although I did it for the first couple weeks when we first opened up our meeting on Wednesday nights, because it went from like 30 people to 300 one week. I did think, wow, look, an amazing thing, this is happening. And God corrected me real fast. And he said, remember, Gary Hunt, I remember that thing when you got a little bit cocky and all of a sudden you couldn't take a sober breath, Steve? And I went like this. Ooh. And Don called me aside because he saw I was getting a lot of notoriety. Me, I was getting a lot of notoriety. And he took me aside and he says, listen, I'm nervous for you. You're doing the steps at the 12-step house. You started this Bible study where hundreds of people come to. And you're doing all this stuff. And I'm afraid you're going to get a big head. And you know what? the worst thing that an alcoholic can get is a big head. We have to stay right-sized all the time. Right-sized, which means right-sized. We don't want to be getting too big for him. Because if you start thinking you can run the show, guess what God does? Why don't you run the show? Oh, you think you can run the show? Well, I say, you know what, good luck. Have a good time. Enjoy yourself. And then we start running around like one of those wind-up toys, bumping into walls. Beep, beep. And then we go to meetings and say, my life is I'm bumping into walls, I'm bumping into walls. And a guy named Chris, like a guy like Chris will come over that's been around for years. He'll come over and go, maybe you should stop bumping into walls. And you go, oh my God, that was so profound. You see, I remember a time where it says in the first step, go out and try some controlled drinking. I remember a time that I went out and I tried some controlled drinking. I had this near beer in the house. And I thought to myself, I really wouldn't relapse if I added
water.
What's that stuff you cook with?
Oil. Sherry.
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 Vanilla extract. I thought to myself, listen to this insanity. That's right, I'm telling you what I used to... That's right, young people, this is crazy, but this is about craziness. I took vanilla extract because I saw that it had 10% alcohol and I added it to near beer. Now, have you ever had vanilla extract in near beer? It's something that should never be put together. It's two different substances from two different worlds that should never meet, let alone be ingested. And I ingested that substance, and I thought to myself, well, I'm not drinking. I'm in near beer with cooking stuff. And really, there's no harm for potential. There's no potential harm there. You know, eventually, I just discarded the near beer, and I started drinking vanilla extract. I know, nobody in this room would ever do such a thing. I mean, if I'm over at this crowd, they're like, oh. People that would shoot rocks off the sidewalk, they're like, oh, he drank vanilla extract. That's right, I drank vanilla extract. Put it down. And I thought that when I picked up my 7-year medallion, shortly after that, the next week, that I was sober. Turns out I wasn't sober from the time I took that Xanax that was prescribed to me, because I went from being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous to using something that I didn't need to use. Now, did I know I did that when I went for that prescription? Absolutely not. I had every reason. I had pain. I had real pain, not imagined. And I needed to take that substance, I thought. Later on, I found out that my body will produce pain in so many different ways to get what it would like. I mean, I want to be honest with you. I don't believe I've ever taken a pill that my body didn't chemically need or physically need. But the problem is that my brain will produce some incredible side effects to get me to take a pill. I mean, it'll keep me up for 2 days at a time. I will get chronic back pain. I could get side pain. I could get migraine pain. My body is this incredible chemically induced thing that will produce stuff in me that I will need to take a pill. But now over the last year, 8 years, because I refused to take a pill except when I had the car accident, and that was with the help of God, my body doesn't ask for pills because they didn't get the pills. You could cry all you want. You ain't getting it. I talk to myself. You ain't getting it. Because I know that I don't have any power. The reason the principle behind the first step is honesty is because you have to honestly admit that you're powerless. And in all affairs, when it comes to, well, for me, it's really powerless in many, many different affairs. But since we're talking about alcoholism, I want to talk about alcoholism. But I want to tell you, the reason people say to me, you look down at people that go to the track, you look down at people that go to gambling. No, I don't look down on them. I don't go because I'm powerless. You look down at people that do this, I do that. I don't look down on anybody. I don't do that because I'm powerless. I'm married to a beautiful wife, but if I wasn't married to a beautiful wife, I wouldn't be going to Tootsie's because that's not part of this program. When it says When it says practicing these principles in all our affairs, that's not one of the principles in anyone's affair. In this book. You see, the principles that we're going to be talking about, honesty, hope, purity, that's not one of the principles. And I happen to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in the principles behind these steps. So when I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, that was the beginning of the insanity in my life, me starting to drink near beer with vanilla extract in it. Finally, just vanilla extract. And finally, of course, I banned the vanilla extract for alcohol. Now, and then, of course, I was drinking alcohol and pills because I had both substances. And then I thought to myself, if I ever have a problem with alcohol again, I would come right back. We know how that is, right? We'll come right back. I said to my wife, if I ever have a problem with alcohol, not that she knew I was doing pills. She thought that that was way past me. I said, if I ever have a problem with alcohol again, I'll come right back. Because the big book says we should come right back. So I figured I'd just come right back. But I couldn't come right back. First of all, I couldn't admit that I was powerless over my alcohol. I couldn't admit that. I was always knew that I was powerless over drugs. I always knew that. Point. Let me tell you something. My family will tell you, my wife will tell you, I always said I'm powerless over drugs, but I know I can drink again. I always had that reservation. And you know what it says in the big book? If you have that reservation, your sobriety will be precarious. You know what precarious means? Not good. Look it up. A precarious means unstable, uncertain, insecure. A double-minded man will be unstable in all his ways. You want to be unstable? You want to be bipolar in your program, let alone in your life? You want to one day feel good, one day feel bad, and I got to use in between? That's precarious. If you can't honestly admit, and I want you guys to hear me in the back. I want you to really, really hear this. If you cannot honestly admit that you're powerless, you have no shot. It's really, that's what precarious means, no shot. You got no shot. Now, that's not hopeful. Do you mean to tell me if I can't take a thorough first step, if I can't take an honest first step, if I think that I could drink again someday when no one's looking, maybe in the Bahamas or something, or far away, maybe if it's a perfect scenario, maybe after I retire and I got $50,000 in the bank and everybody, my kids are off to college, you think I won't be able to take a martini? No. I like that. No. No. Simple as that. No. Just like I'll never be able to fly if I jump out of an airplane, I go like this real fast. As much as I want to, as much as I would like to fly, as much as I aerodynamically, I believe I could do it. I can't fly. So that's what it makes. That makes me a bad person. That makes me a weak person because I can't fly. No, it makes me human being. And guess what? In that category, I'm also an alcoholic, which means I can never take a drink again without having consequences. Now, as soon as you get that, as soon as you put that into the safe, the safe that's unlocked with the thing that nobody's going to know about until we get to the fourth step, and I'm going to talk to you about letting that thing out of the safe. As soon as you open up that safe and you put it in that secret compartment, you will never be able to drink or drug again, and you put it in that safe. But here's the beautiful thing. When you close that lock, just for today. I'm not going to be able to drink when I'm 60. I know I'm going to be able to drink when I'm 60. Okay, but just for today. Just for today, I will not take a drink of drug. And not because, and let me tell you something. The way that I used to think that I would never drink, I would never take a drug again because my life was completely unmanageable for drugs. And then this is what I used to think. And I won't drink today because it's not good for me. Like too much red meat. That's where I was for 5 years in AA. For 5 years in AA, if you think about what I'm saying, a lot of you have this already in your mind. You think, I'm not going to do cocaine again, and because it's probably not good for me, I'm not going to drink. Like cholesterol type inducing stuff. You have to put alcohol in the exact same category of cyanide to my body. Now, for the alcoholics in here that never take a drug, it's the same exact thing. For alcoholics in here that never took a drug, you know that if you go in for surgery and you're prescribed medication, that if you have real alcoholism, if you don't pray to God to ask you to give you pain relief without euphoria, you could become a junkie at 70. You could be doing Roxy's and Moxy's and Poxy's and all that stuff at 70. Because we have alcoholism, which means we have it today. Just like we will never be able to fly, no matter how much we want to. One day at a time, we never, never have the right to put that stuff in our system again. Now, that sounds like so ominous, right? It sounds so serious. It sounds like so, never again. Let me tell you something. Once you get that done, once your first step is solid, once you don't have to go back there, once you admit that and you have the principle behind the first step, honesty, it's like that. It's like those games, those Dungeons and Dragons. You got that thing. You don't have to go back to that part of that castle again. You could go in there and say, listen, I got that. I honestly know I can never drink a drug again, that I'm powerless, and that my life used to be unmanageable. You don't think my life was unmanageable? My life was so unmanageable that my sister that's sitting right over there, I used to call her and tell her, I want to kill myself. I want to die. I want to die. There was such a cloud over me every single day, and I had already had 5 years. And after I started taking medications, and then I relapsed, and then I started taking other stuff, and I'd be driving, and I'd call up my sister, and I said, oh, I don't know what this feeling is. It's a feeling of impending doom, and I want to die. You know what that was, that feeling of impending doom? That was impending doom. It was coming. That's why I had a feeling of impending doom. Because that was coming. And I said, I can't live another day. I can't go on another day. I have this darkness over me. Like you said, I get this darkness over me. I got this depression over me. Not true. What I had was over me was a cloud of alcoholism. And I thought it was some external force that I just couldn't live. And that's what the enemy wants us to believe. Amen. That we got this thing that we can't shake. We can shake it. The answer is there's a power greater than ourselves. That one is God. And we need to find him now. Not may you may to find him now. You need to find him now. And I needed to find him now. I remember one time, and it just brings up a lot of stuff, having my sister here for the first time. You know, she's in recovery now, and my dad's in recovery 15 years or 17 years. And my sister's in recovery coming up on 1 year next week. And she's like this great speaker in Long Island. But I remember sitting by 95, and I remember crying and sitting. And my wife, of course, is in Al-Anon. I didn't bring that up right away because I'm not always happy about that one. I mean, it's good, and then, you know, it's like going to the gym. It's good, but it hurts. It's good for you, but it hurts. Yeah, that's the problem with that. And I remember sitting there on the side of 95, and my nephew had just come down. And I remember sitting there with tears coming out of my eyes, and my sister's always been my closest person in my life, always been my confidant. We're very close. We've always been close. And I remember telling her, I don't think I'm going to make it through the day. Now, here's the crazy thing about it. I didn't think it had to do with the substance I was putting up my nose. I actually thought the substance that I was putting on my nose was actually curing me of my depression. See, I actually thought the thing that was killing me was the cure. So if you think that this thing that got you in here, the same thing that said, you know what, it looks like a good idea that I smoke the entire carpet and I don't go to work for 3 months. If you think the same brain that got you in here is the one that should start taking over your life again, I don't want that guy ever showing up again. I don't want that brain that said to me, after not having alcohol in my system for all those years, you know what, drinking would be a good idea again. Because that guy, this guy, I don't want ever running the show. So the substance that was killing me, I thought was curing me. So you can imagine, if I thought the substance that was killing me was curing me, I thought you guys were the problem. When I was in transitions, and I was in transition, I fought every step of the way. I hated Renee, I hated Vernon, I hated all of them. The guy that owns this place, Emilio, I hated him. And the guy behind the counter, I really hated him. Not him, but the guy that usually works here. I really hate him. He's walking around smiling all the time and treating him. How you do? How you do? Rich. Smiling all the time. Geek. How am I doing? Terrible is how I'm doing. You see, he had surrendered. We were in the same treatment center, same groups, same place. He felt blessed. He thought it was amazing. He was grateful. I was miserable. Same place, same alcoholism, same counselors, same facility. Emilio and Rich, they were grateful. I was miserable. You know why? I couldn't surrender. I didn't know that the principle that was about to come up in step two was hope. I had no hope. Eileen, the main counselor over there at the transition, she called me and she tells me that my wife served me with a restraining order on my birthday. What?
Happy birthday.
I was miserable. My life was down the toilet. My father, who was in retirement, my mother, they had to come work at my store in a flea market. They had to come out of retirement to work with my wife to keep my business open. And I'm sitting in a treatment center in Miami. Again. Fifth treatment center. Again. Big loser. You know what? As soon as I really believed I was a loser, I became a winner. Because while I was in there, Bobby, I was actually a loser, but I thought I was a winner. I'm in there going, you bunch of losers. And I was the loser. All these guys walking around, smiling and happy, and I had my big bag of medications that they had prescribed to me. They said I was bipolar. Of course I was bipolar. I was doing things in my nose, doing things in my thing, doing it in my... Of course I was bipolar. As soon as I stopped doing all those things, I stopped being bipolar. You know, there is a solution. I want to read a little bit from the book. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of the pride, the confession of shortcomings, which is the process required for successful consummation, which means a start in this program. But we saw that it really worked in others. You know, when I came here and Lenny was said, welcome home, and he said, have a seat, I didn't think it was going to work for me, Eric. I thought it worked for him. I was hopeful because I saw it work for other people. But I didn't want to put the work in. I wanted to go straight from miserable to joyous. I wanted to go right bypass divorce papers and restraining order. I wanted to bypass all that. I wanted to go right from 12 days to start speaking over here. I wanted to go right here. I saw myself in the treatment center speaking here. And I tried it one day. They told me to sit down and shut up for like 5 years. Every time I got up there, they said, we'll call on you, Steve. We'll call you. Take your number. You know, if we don't admit defeat and surrender, we're to be destined to fail. You understand that? You got the concept? I don't want to keep going. I don't want to have to keep going over it. If you get the first step, if you can honestly take a first step and it can honestly say, I truly believe that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. If you can honestly take that, listen, the rest of your life is the best of your life, right there. But if you want to fight with that, if you want to fight with that, you can't take a good fifth step. If you want to fight with that, you're not going to be a great 11th step. If you're going to fight with that, you're going to do a lousy 12th step. If the whole time you're in here, when we're supposed to be serving others, you see, why do I keep mentioning the guy that was there when I was on the steps coming in from transitions? Because he was serving others. But if you're thinking about you all the time, you're not saying hello to anybody. You're actually sitting in these chairs, and I look around, and there's a couple people actually in this room that are, and I'm not saying this to be funny, there is a couple people in this room tonight that are miserable. And that's funny. Nice. You know why they're miserable? I guarantee you they're thinking about themselves. The entire time, what can I do with my plans? This guy stinks. Bing, 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 bing. Me, 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 me. They're focused on I. What, I want to be focused on you. With the whole joy of living, everything about these 12 steps is how can I serve you? I serve a God that serves you. Isn't that amazing? You think we come in here, it's all about me. My life stinks. Everything around me stinks. I hate everybody. How can I help you? But after you've been doing that for a while, it starts to, you know, you don't even believe it. You know, you don't even believe it. I'm not sure if Rich, the guy that does the coffee, I'm not sure if him at 6 months of sobriety was always happy, but either he pretended or he was. But he did it. He did it. He did it. I came in here for the first time. I haven't seen him. He must have now, I have eight, so he has to have 8.5 years or 9 years of sobriety. The guy is still happy. Now, I don't know if he was happy when we were in transitions, but I can tell you he was a lot happier than me. And he went around and he said, "How can I help you?" And he used to walk around the church and say how great Renee was, how great all these counselors were. And somehow he believed it. Somehow he believed it. You ever hear that thing, fake it till you make it? It's true. If you come in here and you're miserable, you will be miserable. If you come in here thinking all about me, it's going to be all about you. You see, one thing I found out is that I'm always on my mind. I think about me. I'm worried about me. I'm looking at me. When I pass a mirror, I'm not thinking about you. Never. I never walk by a mirror. I go, I wonder what Sean Murphy looks like tonight. Never. I pass a mirror. I go, how do I look tonight? And guess what? That will kill you. You see, if you stay me focused, you'll die in AA. That's the crazy thing about it. But if you can, at least for an hour, you know why meetings are amazing? Because at least for an hour, if you're in the deal, and you really know about what's going on in here, you won't be thinking about you as much. I'm looking over this room, I can tell a lot of you are already thinking about you, but as much. And then I have this prayer that I want to share with you, because I'm not sure when I'm going to see you again. I'm definitely not going to see you next week. Okay, so let's just put that out there. I'm going to be with my family. And I want to tell you something. I want to make a confession. You know, my sister was counting the days, and my wife was counting the days during the holidays. I had 20 days. I had 15 days. And then came January 2nd, and I had some days put together, and I thought that I would celebrate on January 2nd. Not this year, 8 years ago. And I just got out of transitions, and I had a fist fight there. I'm famous for having a fist fight in the middle of treatment. That was glorious. And I get kicked out of there, and I use in the house, and I use drugs underneath the stairs in my house. And I remember that I heard the door open, and I'm in this closet, this luggage closet in my house. And I remember looking up at my wife, and my wife is crying, and my mother's crying. And I remember my father dialing the phone to my sister in that garage. And he calls up my sister and says, he did it again. And to me, I couldn't believe I did it again. You see, any time that ever happened, it was like a movie happening to me. I couldn't believe that I did it again. Because you know what? I was powerless. I never could determine what was going to happen if I used again. And my family stood by, and I crushed them every time I used again. Crushed them. So I'm not going to waste time inside Alcoholics Anonymous pretending that this is easy. I'm not going to waste time in Alcoholics Anonymous to pretend it was easy on my family. I want everything that AA has to offer. And here's the thing about me. As much as I love AA, I love what AA does for me and getting me closer to him. You see, as much as I love Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like loving the car on the way to Disney World. You know, I have a Ford, and it's a good Ford, and it could get me to Disney World, but I don't want to be worshiping my Ford. I want to get to Disney World. And the 12 steps will get you to Disney World. But I don't know about you, I don't want to just stay worshiping the steps, because I've known some very miserable people that worship the steps. And I've known some very, and you know, and we know some people that are just bitter in AA. Because they fell in love with stuff. And what I fell in love with is what AA has given me. This is what I'm in love with. I'm in love what AA gives us. The gifts of the program. The fruits of the Spirit. This is what I'm in love with. This is why we come back. This is why you guys drive from Boca all the way down here. This is why we do this for 31 years. This is why this is not, this is why Spike's done this for 18 years, because it's fun. We love it. We can't wait to serve another person. We can't wait to tell them our story. The big book says that the Lord has been so good to me, I just want to tell everybody about it. If you can't wait to get to the next meeting, if you can't wait to help the next person, I don't know where you're at. You're not in AA. Because the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is best described as the joy of living. Now, here's where I don't want you to worry about it. If you don't have joy right now in your heart, if you're not joyful tonight, if you don't have joy in your program, the 11th step says, so what? That just means you're wacky. It means you got to do some work. It means that all it is it's like an MRI. It's a spiritual MRI. If you don't have joy in your heart, if you're depressed right now as I'm speaking, if right now while I'm speaking, you're sitting there miserable, you just got some work to do. That's what's so hopeful about the second step. I can't do it. I was powerless. There's one that can get me there. There's one that can do it. I know that he can do it if I turn my life over to him. And let me tell you, if you're holding on to your life, and you got your life, and you said, this is my life, and I'm not going to let it go to a power greater than myself, I'm not going to let it go to the creator of the universe, then guess what? You get to have your life. And everything that you have in it. But can you imagine this? If you let go of your life and you give it to the Creator, can you imagine what He could do with our lives? Let me tell you, looking at one of the miracles here, and as I look over the room, I'm looking over a room of miracles. I'll see you in 2 weeks when we do the third step. Oh!